con Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahavirjan Karavavahai, Tejasvinavadhi Tamastuma Vidvishavahai, Om Shanti Shanti Shanti, Chaitanyam Sarvagam Sarvam, Sarva-guha-guha-shayam Yat sarva-vishayatitam Asmai sarva-vide namaha. Om. Very good. So, here we go. Welcome to you all. And also, welcome to the many students who are regularly watching these classes, attending these classes, I should say, online. We continue today with our study of Upadesha Sahasri. We just began chapter 16 in the prior class, and we return to a familiar but extremely important topic. When I say extremely important, it's because it addresses directly the problem of suffering. The topic, as you might remember from our last class, was identification. To the extent that you identify with your body and mind, you suffer. To the extent that you identify with your house and car, you suffer. To the extent that you identify with your roles in life, your job, your career, you suffer. To the extent that you identify with your grown children, you suffer. So the focus of Vedanta is to address the problem of suffering by shifting your identification from, and I've been stressing that because so many people, teachers and books often say, destroy this identification. And somehow that's not a very accurate way of describing the psychology of what happens. What happens in our mind is usually not some kind of radical destruction, but usually some kind of gradual shift. That's what we're engaged in, shifting our identification away from the body and mind and all these externals to the truth of who you are as Satchidananda Atma, unborn, uncreated consciousness. Okay, with that brief introduction, we'll pick up the thread with verse 8. Shiro dukkarinatmanam, shiro dukkarinatmanam, dukyasmiti hi pasyati, dukhasiti hi pasyati, drashtanyo dukkino drashyat, drashtanyo dukkino drashyat, drashtritvachana dukhyasau, drashtritvachana dukhyasau. Shankara has a way of using very few words to convey things of such great significance. So one who pashyati in the second line, one who sees first line, atmanam, oneself, one who sees oneself, how? As shiro, shiras is head. Shiras dukkha is pain in the head. We talked about that last week. Headache. So don't think that headaches are any kind of modern phenomenon. We know at least 1,200 years ago, Shankara and his disciples must have suffered from headaches. So shiro dukkarina. So when you pashyati, consider your atmanam, consider yourself as one who has a headache or anything else. You have a head. If you have a head, you can have a headache. If you don't have a head, but I'm being serious, you don't have a head. Consciousness has a head, arms, feet. This is the problem of identification. And the fact that you laughed at my statement a few moments ago shows how deep that identification goes. Of course I have a head. Consciousness doesn't have a head. Doesn't get headaches. But when you consider yourself to be one who has a head, then definitely you're subject to headaches, and therefore, in second line, dukhi asmi iti. You come to the conclusion, asmi, I am dukhi. I am one who suffers. I suffer. Notice this conclusion. I'll ask you a rhetorical question. Is the conclusion, I suffer, is that conclusion due to the headache or due to the conclusion that I have a head? This is Vedanta. You suffer not due to the headache. You suffer due to your conclusion that this is my head, it's pounding like anything, and I won't be okay until and unless that pounding goes away. You have now made your contentment contingent upon something over which you have little control, and that's a formula for misery. I mentioned to someone the other day, I'm an expert in misery. When I was young, even into my adulthood, I created so much misery and suffering for myself in this manner and in so many other manners. So I speak from the standpoint of being an expert in misery, and I'm telling you, the problem is not the headache. The problem is identification of yourself as being one who has a head. Shankara explains this in the second half. He says, drashta, the observer of the head, the observer of the headache. Same thing, right? You're the observer of the head. You're the observer of the throbbing that goes on inside. He says, drashta, the observer, is anyaha dukhinaha, is separate from the sufferer. The observer is different than the sufferer. Who is the sufferer? The sufferer is the one who has made that wrong conclusion. Who is the observer? The one who knows you've made a wrong conclusion. The consciousness that illumines all the activities in your mind, that unchanging consciousness. So the observer is other than the sufferer. Is that a word in English even? I don't know. I think so. Yeah. So the observer is different than the sufferer, drishyat. Huh? Yeah. Drishyat, because the sufferer is observed. You observe yourself, you know what it feels like to have a headache. Interesting. When you say dukhi aham, probably you wouldn't say it in Sanskrit. You would probably say it to yourself in English, I have a headache. When you say I have a headache, or in Sanskrit, dukhi aham, when you say that, do you know that you've said it mentally? When you say, I have a headache, and you're talking to yourself, we have this inner chatter, this self-talk it's called. So when you say to yourself, I have a headache, do you know that you've said to yourself, you have a headache? Of course. Huh. The sufferer, the one who says, I have a headache, is known to the observer your consciousness. So to whom does the suffering belong? Drishtatvacha na dukhi asau. Drishtatvacha na dukhi asau. Asau, that one, that consciousness which reveals even the conclusion that I have a headache, that consciousness is na dukhi, it is not the sufferer, because drashtritvat, it is the observer. The observer, and here we go to one of our fundamental teachings, the observer is not affected by the observed. So many times we use that familiar metaphor of the sun shining and revealing things, a metaphor used to show how your consciousness reveals activities in your mind. Sun is not affected by what it shines upon in the same way consciousness is not affected by what it reveals in your mind. So even though, and this is going to be explained further in the next verse, so I won't talk about it much more here, except to say that consciousness remains utterly unaffected by whatever happens in your mind. Lately I've been in classes, you know, we talk about the same subject matter again and again. I find sometimes my focus shifting slightly from year to year. Lately, I've been focused on the idea that consciousness is a fundamental reality. It's the truth of who you are. It's the truth of every sentient being. Fundamental realities don't just change. What an American expression, willy-nilly. How's that? Fundamental reality is like the law of gravity doesn't just change, like the law of cause and effect doesn't just change. Consciousness is such a fundamental reality, it doesn't just change. So Shankara amplifies this in the next verse. Let's see that. Dukhisya dukhyaham manat, dukhisya dukhyaham manat, dukhino darshananava, dukhino darshananava, samhating garibhir drashta, samhater gibhir drashta, dukhi dukhasya naiva saha, dukhi dukhasya naiva saha. Dukhi syat, you become a sufferer. Why? Dukhi aham manat. How he makes it absolutely clear. Due to your conclusion, I suffer. Your conclusion is the source of suffering. Some of you may know a little bit about cognitive psychology. One of the main principles of cognitive psychology is you suffer because of wrong conclusions you've made. Now, the typical example is, no one loves me. Right? Typical thing, somebody comes to the counselor, the therapist, psychologist, no one loves me. This conclusion, obviously it's a wrong conclusion, no matter how obnoxious you are. There must be a few people out there in the world who can tolerate you. So it's a wrong conclusion. No one loves me. But it's a wrong conclusion that makes you suffer. And the role of cognitive therapy is to address these wrong conclusions. Does it sound a little bit like Advaita Vedanta? Sure does to me. They have a parallel strategy, let us say. Both cognitive Vedanta, that's interesting. I'm already mixing them up. Cognitive psychology and Advaita Vedanta both begin by asserting that you suffer because of your wrong conclusions, and then both proceed to remove those wrong conclusions. So I find a parallel between the two. By the way, cognitive behavioral therapy is the therapy of choice nowadays. There were many other, through history, starting with Freudian psychotherapy and all of this stuff. You know, so all of that is now considered archaic, and the modern therapy of choice is cognitive behavioral therapy. From my few words, you can see the power of that approach. So, first line, Shankara says, "You suffer because of your wrong conclusion." Nava in the second line, but you don't suffer. Darshanat dukhinaha, dukhinaha darshanat. By the way, you know that when I recite these words, I'm breaking the sandhis, the grammatical changes. So what I recite may look slightly different from what you're reading. It's because I'm using some grammatical rules here to separate the words. So dukhinaha darshanat. Because he says, Nava, you do not suffer because you observe the sufferer. You suffer because of your conclusion, I suffer. You do not suffer merely because you observe the suffering, merely because you observe the sufferer. Let's make that very clear. Right now there are hundreds of thousands, millions, few millions of people, children, families, women in Gaza suffering immensely. We won't get into the politics, but you can't deny they are suffering immensely. Knowing their suffering, how do you feel? We're in a comfortable room, having an interesting conversation. There's not much suffering. Of course, we all have some compassion. And if we think about it for a while, if I go on talking about it for a while, chances are you will feel some sense of sadness for those many people who are suffering. But if we move on to the next topic, that's that suffering is gone. Point is that merely observing suffering doesn't make you suffer. What's the point? Well, setting compassion aside, merely observing the suffering. So what is the message here? Merely observing your head pounding like anything is not the source of suffering. Again, observation doesn't lead to suffering. The observer is unaffected by the observed. Here Shankara makes that point a little differently in the second half here. He says, end of the third line, drashta, the observer. The observer who is samhate angaribihi. The observer who is samhate in the presence, connected to angadi bihi, that which has angas. What are angas? Limbs. So you got arms, legs, even the head is considered a limb, at least in Vedanta. So you have these various appendages, and you find yourself associated with this thing, this body, which has all these appendages. But your mere association with his body, with its appendages, dukhi dukhasya naiva saha, saha drashta, the observer, naiva dukhi, does not become a sufferer, dukhasya, of suffering. Simply put, Atma doesn't get headaches. That's all he's saying. Atma is unchanging. Unchanging consciousness can't get headaches. Unchanging consciousness doesn't need Tylenol, ever. Now, this is not denying the fact that our bodies require some medications and care. Fine, we do what we need to do to take care of our bodies. But recognizing that unchanging consciousness is utterly unaffected by the problems of our body and mind, in spite, and the point of the second half, in spite of its proximity, samhate. In spite of being stuck, as it were, along with everything, the metaphor we've used so many times is in the proximity to the orange cloth, this clear crystal appears orange. Did the clear crystal become orange? Of course not. It is an artifact. It is an illusion, optical illusion, as it were, due to the proximity of the orange cloth. The orangeness belongs to the cloth, not to the crystal. The headache belongs to the head and not the observer. It's that simple. Of course, that simple conceptually, but this has to go in, and that's why we, and Shankara himself, we keep talking about it again and again. Have you noticed this topic comes up again and again and again? For an important reason. You know that repetition, especially in scriptures, repetition is considered a huge defect. Then why is this repetition going on? You figured it out. It's absolutely necessary. It doesn't go in just like that. It takes time to reflect on it, and hearing it again and again and again is part of that practice. And that's what our whole, that's what our programs here are about. That's what my teaching is about. That's what your attending classes is about. We have to hear this stuff again and again. We have to, I like this language, we have to be immersed in these teachings for a length of time to support this inner transition, this inner shift of identification. The shift takes place, but it takes place gradually. To support that gradual shift, this constant immersion is necessary. Okay. Now, before the next verse, so we're now on verse 9. Next is verse 17. So what happened to those verses? So in the introduction to this chapter, I said the chapters are getting longer. And remember chapter 18, I think, is 230 verses. So they're getting quite long. And more importantly, the chapters are including very technical discussions. And what I've chopped out here, so to speak, is a very technical discussion about Vijnanavada Buddhism. So first of all, if you don't know what is Vijnanavada, then that discussion won't be very valuable. But just to give you some insight, so here, the Vijnanavadis, this particular school of Buddhism, you know that all schools of Buddhism reject Satchidananda Atma. They reject consciousness as being the true self. There are four major schools of Buddhism. All four reject the existence of a consciousness independent of body and mind. They accept the sense of self. There is still a self. We would call it ahankara. They use words like skanda and all of this. We won't get into it. But here's the point, and this is what Shankara goes into. He says, according to these Buddhists, since they don't accept the existence of Atma, they posit that the Buddhi is the one who suffers, the Buddhi is the one who knows the suffering. So the Buddhi is both the observer and the observed. This is Buddhist philosophy. This is not our philosophy. And then Shankara takes that theory and applies it to Atma. He says, well, if Buddhi could be the observer and the observed, is it possible for Atma to be the observer and observed? Then he pulls out some fancy logic to show that one thing can either be a subject or object. It cannot simultaneously be both. And he ends up with a metaphor: the sun doesn't illumine itself, the sun shines. You see the sun not because it's illumining itself. You see the sun because it's shining by nature. So Shankara does this in a, you can see the number of verses I've skipped, in a fairly complicated way. Quite a bit of logic. And to me, it seems like this class will be more valuable if we sidestep these topics. Because if I take this topic at the same rate as I take other teachings, you won't get it. So we'd have to take a class or two to really understand Vijnanavada, then we'd have to take a class or two to understand Shankara's arguments here. It would be very, you could get it. I have no doubt you could understand it all if it's presented properly, but it would take, you know, half a dozen classes just to cover this half a dozen verses. So for this reason, I think this class will be much more powerful. I mentioned before this principle of editing. If you have written something, the more you edit, meaning the more you remove, the better it becomes. This is almost a universal rule of editing. Because you remove the fluff, you remove the unnecessary material, what remains is the essence. And so that essence previously was covered up by some of the so-called fluff. By removing the unnecessary material, the essence becomes that much more powerful. So for that reason, we're skipping over this section, and from time to time. And I'll explain what we're skipping over so you get an idea of what's going on. And I think I said in the first class, we're seeing roughly half the verses of this chapter. So Shankara dedicates quite a bit of attention to these other issues. So that being said, interesting though, when he's done with that, with his refutation of the Buddhists, he comes back and lands almost exactly in the same place. Not quite. We'll see that here. It's like he's picking up the thread, so to speak, after. I used to watch my guru doing that. He was so good. He would love to go on these long detours in his discussions, but he would all, and it could be half an hour. He'd be wandering. And of course, it would be valuable. It was not like he's talking about useless stuff. So it would be really valuable spiritual teachings, just not what is present in the current text. But he would always come exactly back to where he left off. He had that skill. Okay, we will pick up the thread here. Verse 17. Ajnanam kalpana mulam, ajnanam kalpana mulam, samsarasya niyamakam, samsarasya niyamakam, hitvatmanam param brahma, hitvatmanam param brahma, vindyan muktam sadabhayam, vindyana. So far we're talking about identification. What is identification? We've used fancy words before, like superimposition, adhyasa. To superimpose I-ness on the physical body is superimposition. That's identification. So we're taking it another. We keep using this word, identification. Let's now analyze. What is that identification? How is it that I say I am this body? Well, this is a very profound analysis. In fact, this is the analysis that Shankara gives in his introduction to his Brahma Sutra Bhasha. He says the issue here is we take the I-ness that belongs, when you say I, the essence of that I-ness is the conscious being, right? Your body has no essential I-ness. Your mind has no essential I-ness. Essentially, that I-ness belongs to consciousness, the conscious being. But what do? We take that I-ness that belongs to the conscious being and we superimpose it on the body. I. This is me and mind. this is me. And then conversely, we take attributes of the body, like maleness in this case, and we superimpose the attributes on the body on consciousness. We have two-way superimposition, two-way confusion. We superimpose the I-ness of Atma on the body and mind, and we superimpose the traits of the body and mind on Atma. This is two-way confusion. It is, we call it superimposition. In Sanskrit, we use the word adhyasa. So, and this is an important Sanskrit term, you should know its meaning. Adhyasa means superimposition. Now, Shankara's analysis in this verse is to say, why do we do that? Where does the superimposition come from? And he makes a very obvious statement, and this is one of the fundamental teachings of Advaita Vedanta, and that is adhyasa, superimposition, is necessarily preceded by ignorance. To put it in terms of body and mind here, due to ignorance of your true self as Satchidananda Atma, therefore, you're able to do this two-way superimposition. If you knew your true nature as Satchidananda Atma, you wouldn't fall prey to this superimposition. So what my guru called self-non-recognition is the root cause for the superimposition and identification that makes us suffer. And that is what Shankara is describing in this verse. He says, Ajnanam is kalpana mulam. Ignorance is the mulam, the root, the cause for kalpana. Kalpana means what you imagine, what you project, what you superimpose. This is what he is saying here. Actually, I want to go to the board. There's something a little technical here I'd like to share with you. Let me see, push the right button and turn this one off. Good, remind me to put this back. Okay. So, The metaphor that we typically use is the rope snake. You all know the story. In a dark alley, you see a coiled up rope. You think it's a snake. That's an example of superimposition, right? You superimpose snake on rope. And you superimpose snake on rope because of ignorance of the rope. If you knew it was a rope, you wouldn't superimpose the snake on it. So this is the teaching. We start with ignorance. And due to ignorance, either ignorance of the rope or ignorance of your true self as Satchidananda Atma, that results in superimposition. And we're talking about, in particular, identification. The Sanskrit words are important here, so make sure they're known. Ajnana is ignorance, which then leads to, right in Sanskrit again, the ajnana leads to, adhyasa. This is the sequence. So look at what he's saying. Due to ignorance of the rope, you superimpose the snake. And notice, snake makes you afraid. Snake makes you suffer. Interesting. Does not knowing the rope make you suffer? If it's really dark, you don't even see the rope. It's not that ignorance of the rope makes you suffer. Who does this? You do. You superimpose the snake on the rope, you create your own suffering. This is Vedanta once again. So now to apply it here. Due to ajnana, the so-called veil of ignorance that prevents you from recognizing your true nature, due to that particular ignorance, we superimpose the attributes of the body and mind on consciousness. We superimpose the I-ness which belongs on consciousness to the body and mind, and that causes suffering. So this is the essence of the problem here, which is what Shankara is discussing here. Let me get back here. This one and this one. Good. All right. So this is what Shankara is describing in the first half of this verse. He says, ajnanam, ignorance, is kalpana mulam, is the root cause for projection, the root cause for superimposition. Also, it is niyamakam, that which causes samsara, that which causes worldly suffering. Ignorance is the root cause. And here, we're not talking about ignorance of a rope. Ignorance of your true nature as Sat-Chit-Ananda is a root cause for projection and the root cause for suffering. If you didn't project, you wouldn't suffer. In fact, hold off on that. We'll see that in the next verse. So, yeah, good. So, second half, Hitwa, having removed that ignorance, Vindyat, one discovers Atmanam, one's true self, as Param Brahma, absolute reality. Muktam, liberated. Sada Abhayam, always free from fear. There's something that might not be apparent to you here. Notice Hitwa, having removed. What is to be removed? Should we remove? And when I say this, you're likely to make a mistake, so you don't have to say. Should we remove the identification, or should we remove ignorance? If you had a choice of two, A or B choice, which should be removed? Is it better to remove the identification with the body and mind? Or is it better to remove the ignorance? Some of you have figured it out correctly. And that is, Shankara has already said, ajnanam kalpana mulam. The root cause is ignorance. And let's make that really clear. Suppose you remove the identification, the superimposition. In fact, you do that every night in deep sleep. I'm stealing from the next verse. We'll see the Shankara teaches this in the next verse. In deep sleep, do you have any identification?
No.
Do you have any suffering? That's interesting. They go together, right? That's what we just discussed. Identification and suffering it's a package deal, as they say. They come together. So in deep sleep, you are free from identification. So, great. Except you wake up and the identification comes back because the root cause has not been addressed. It's like many people have frustration with medical problems. They go to a doctor. If the doctor only treats the symptoms and doesn't treat the underlying illness, then the fundamental illness never gets treated. So this is a nice metaphor. The root cause here is like the illness. The superimposition is like symptoms. If you had an illness with no symptoms, would you? Any problem? In fact, in a way, consider, how about this? we have a microbiologist sitting here, and she would tell you that in your gut and in other parts of your body are gazillions of bacteria. Oh, man. And yet, here we are. We seem to be okay. So, in spite of those bacteria, they create no symptoms. They're not illness, but you see the metaphor. If you had an illness and no symptoms, it wouldn't be a problem. That's not what happens. What happens is you have the illness, you have symptoms, doctor treats the symptoms and doesn't treat the illness. And this leads to our frustration. So here, Shankara says that when you address the root cause, ajnanam, that ignorance which is kalpana, mulam, the root cause for projection, root cause for superimposition, root cause for identification. When you recognize your true nature as Satchitananda Atma, the problem is over. You've addressed the root cause of the problem of identification. When you know you are Satchitananda Atma, and you know that as vividly as you know that you are the person sitting in your chair. Right now, you know you're the person sitting in your chair. When you know that you are Satchitananda Atma with the same vividness as what you experience right now sitting in your chair, you'll find that identification is impossible. It goes away. We said before, it takes time. Yes, it takes time, but it goes away. All right? And in the absence, you discover your true self, Atmanam, as Param Brahma, that's that fundamental reality, unchanging, which is Sada Muktam, eternally free, never got into a state of bondage. Bondage is due to ignorance in the mind. Atma never got into bondage, and that Atma also Sada Abhayam, is nothing can threaten that Satchitananda Atma. Good. Let's see one more verse. Jagrat Swapnautayor Bijam. Jagrat Swapnautayor Bijam. Sushupta Khyam Tamo Mayam. Sushupta Khyam Tamo Mayam. Anyonyasmina Satvacha. Anyonyasmina Satvacha. Nasti tyetat trayam tyajet. Nasti tyetat trayam tyajet. Here Shankara is using the three states of waking, dream, and sleep to help us understand this issue of ignorance leading to superimposition, identification, to understand it better. So he says, Jagrat Swapna, in the waking and dream states, Tayoho Bijam, the root, Bijam literally seed, the cause, the seed or cause, Tayoho, for those two, for the waking state and deep sleep state, is Sushupta Akhyam. It is that which is called Sushupti, deep sleep, which is Tamomayam, tamas, made of tamas. Now, this reference may seem out of place, so it takes just a little bit of explanation. I mentioned it before, actually, and that is, in deep sleep is often called a state of pure ignorance. Deep sleep, that's a good way of describing it. A state of pure tamas, a state of pure ignorance. And what's significant about it is in that state of pure ignorance, as we said, there is no superimposition. Because you're not awake. So in that state, you know, superimposition and suffering only takes place when you're awake. It's so significant that in deep sleep you don't suffer. Everyone says ignorance is bliss. Doesn't that apply here? Ignorance is bliss. That state of complete, perfect ignorance is truly a state of bliss. You can't argue that. The problem is you wake up, which is not really a problem, but you get my point. When you wake up, the problem kicks in, so to speak. By the way, dream could be considered you wake up halfway. So if you wake up halfway, or if you wake up all the way, by the way, there's some neuroscience behind that. You don't go from waking state into dream. You go from waking state to deep sleep, and then you wake up halfway. That's actually what neuroscience teaches. So that, and Shankara's got it right here, where he says that deep sleep is the root cause for the states of waking and dream. So if you wake up halfway into a dream, you identify with your dream body, do you not? So when that elephant is chasing you in a dream, you're afraid because you're identified with your dream body. And if you wake up all the way, then you're threatened by other things, whatever it might be. Not elephants, but more abstract things. You're threatened by the stock market or something like that. Anyway, the point is, when you are awake, you have identification, superimposition, and therefore you suffer in deep sleep. That ignorance is still present, but you don't suffer because temporarily the superimposition has ceased. As soon as you wake up or wake up halfway, that superimposition kicks in, so to speak, as I said before. So now Shankara concludes in the third line, therefore, anyonyasmin asatvaccha na asti iti trayam tyajet. He says, he makes an observation about all three of these conditions. I'm trying to think. Shankara is doing something you're not supposed to do. It's called a mixed metaphor, and I don't want to analyze this to death because it just won't be very helpful. But he's actually using the three states as a metaphor, but then he's mixing it with the truth, the true teachings of Advaita Vedanta on the three states. And according to Advaita Vedanta, anything that changes is not real. Our definition of real is that which doesn't change. The snake comes and goes, it's not real. The waking state comes and goes, not real. Dream state comes and goes, not real. Deep sleep state comes and goes, none of them are real. So therefore Shankara concludes, trayam tyajet. You should reject all of them because anyonyasmin asatvat. Because they are asatvat, they don't exist anyonyasmin inclusively. In other words, they don't exist at the same time. In English, we say they are mutually exclusive. Only one of those states exists at a time, so therefore they're constantly coming and going. Anything that comes and goes is not absolutely real. Therefore, na asti iti, therefore etat trayam, all these three are, they are unreal, and trayam tyajet, you should reject them all. The reason this is a mixed metaphor, let me not do that. And why should I criticize Shankaracharya anyway? That's not fair. That's not, who am I to, let's be very clear. It's a literary problem. It's not a problem with the teaching. So it's just a stylistic thing. You've heard a teacher say, don't use mixed metaphors. So this is, anyway, I think there's a tradition here, whatever your grammar teacher said you shouldn't do, that's what's always done. For you, if your grammar teacher told you never use double negatives, Sanskrit loves double negatives. Okay, this is actually a good place to stop. We'll continue with this teaching in our next class. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinah, Sarve Santu Niramayah, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchid Dukhkabhag Bhavet, Asato Ma Sadgamaya, Tamaso Ma Jyotirgamaya, Mrityor Ma Amritangamaya. Om Shanti 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 Om Tat Sat. Good. All right.